Hello, good morning and welcome. My name is Markus Horstmann. I'm here with Sean Cutter from Fielding Systems, and we're going to talk to you today about how to use Service Bus in the context of the Internet of Things. Let me start out by setting a little bit of context on what I mean when I say Internet of Things. There's many different interpretations. People have different opinions here. In my mind, a big part of why we see customers do Internet of Things is because they need insight into devices that are out in the field, and they want to then derive insight from the data that these devices generate. And why do people want to do that? It's all about money. You want to make more efficient use of your resources, reduce the cost of using those devices, improve environmental impact, efficiency of systems. You want to target your products better to increase your revenue, to get more visibility into your products, improve products as people use them. So with this context, the things in the Internet of Things is really a source of raw material for the data insight pipeline. On the flip side, connected things on the internet can be reached. You can do command and control against them. That enables you to engage with customers beyond the point of sale. You can make changes on device to have customers have a better experience. You can do things like preventive maintenance, give people best practice guidance, do remote servicing by just being able to do action on those devices. So in the larger sense, this really enables customers to do product relationship management rather than customer relationship management. So the devices, the products, become a thing on your radar on things to maintain and build relationships with. So how does Service Bus fit into this? Well, that's where I'm going to spend the rest of this talk. High-level overview, what we're going to do. I'm going to be talking about the Service Bus as the Azure Cloud Device Gateway, and I'll motivate more what that means as we go through. I'm going to motivate that with Sean's help on how this looks like in a real-world scenario from Fielding Systems. And then we'll go into the details, show you some code, give you some samples around how to build devices that can connect to the cloud via Service Bus and that can be controlled from the cloud via Service Bus. And then I'm going to show you a collection of guidance and samples that we have that we're using with a small set of customers at this point that show people how to build a very large-scale, scalable device gateway over existing Service Bus today. And when I say large-scale, I mean millions and millions of devices. I'm going to walk you through some of the things to watch out for while designing these kind of systems, and we would really like to engage with you if you have interest in exploring those things further. Last but not least, I'm also going to talk about Service Bus itself. A few things that are new. Express queues are coming. I'll talk into that in a little more detail. And then we're announcing today an open-source library, actually, for use with Service Bus and the advanced message queuing protocol on small form factor devices like the .NET Micro Framework-based devices. And I will actually take the opportunity to publish this project right here and now. See if it works. It has been published. Thank you. It's not exactly like the new .NET framework, but our small contribution to the world. Feel free to go there and poke around in those sources. All right, let's drill in. So throughout my talk, or our talk, we will be using two main scenarios. One is a fictitious or synthetic, let's call it, scenario that I'll be using. It's about door-to-door vehicle navigation. Think of it as relationship building of a car manufacturer with their customer and some of the things that people might want to do around those kind of scenarios and how they can apply Service Bus in that world. The other scenario will be a Sean's scenario around oil well and other sensor management, and we'll go into that later. So let me give you like a high-level overview on this scenario, just a few things that people might want to do. This is not meant to be comprehensive. It's not even exactly what I'm going to be demoing, but to get you into the context of what things, what kind of things people can do in a vehicle manufacturer scenario. So suppose we want to navigate from door to door. Your calendar has already the details of that. A navigation service may have this information available. So I think it's smart enough to actually notify you when it's time to leave based on traffic, based on weather, may warn you that you're running low on fuel, so you should maybe think about gassing up and take a little more time. So the notification that you get is actually customized based on the circumstances that the backend service may know about. So when you get into the car, of course, the car is smart as well, and it shows you exactly where to go. Maps and directions are already pre-programmed, no more fiddling around with the thing. And it routes you smartly around any construction obstacles. It may even help you find an open parking spot and then pays for you automatically as you get close to that parking spot. And then when you leave your car, it doesn't stop there. It helps you walk to your final destination where you want to go, and then it helps you most find your car when you need to get back again. So think about this for a moment. There's lots of moving parts around this. What kind of data would be needed? What kind of connectivity is needed? Who needs to send data to what? What kind of backend system needs to be built? So that's basically the scenario I have in mind when I talk about some of the technology scenarios on the next slide. So this is a very high level and very busy picture of the kind of systems needed to enable such a solution. And I'm not going to go through all of this in detail. My main point here is this is a complex distributed system that you're going to be building for these kind of things. What you'll see in this picture is service bus technologies highlighted in green. When I say service bus, it's messaging, connectivity, routing data from one place to another. So you can see the vehicles in the center. Of course, they send data up to the cloud. They get data from the cloud. Service bus plays a role. I'll drill into that. How we route messages to the cars, how we can do group cast to different cars, how the telemetry that comes in can get needs to get routed, actually, to different backend system, different modules in the application, multiple systems. So that's a typical case for pub-sub patterns, where the same event stream needs to be consumed by multiple systems. And then there's, of course, other systems that integrate with users, mobile devices, smartphones, who then get notifications on the devices, who get navigation instruction in this particular scenario. And again, there's communication technologies here, notification hubs, which is under the service bus service umbrella place around here, where you, when you want to reach mobile devices via push notifications in a platform agnostic way. Now, over on the right side, you will see maybe it's not a consumer vehicle scenario, but it's a fleet management vehicle scenario. You will have some kind of management person who wants to do fleet management, proactive maintenance on these vehicles, et cetera. And again, you need to build an application geared for that that also taps into the event stream, the data stream that comes from the vehicles, from the Internet of Things. And then at the bottom of the slide, of course, there's integration with traditional backend systems, SAP systems. There's integration with partner systems. You need to get the map data, weather data, et cetera. And again, messaging technology and services play a role there in, as you all know, traditional integration of backend systems, enterprise systems. So let's drill a little bit into the communication aspect. It's basically the center middle part that talks to the devices in the previous diagram. Excuse me. So I pivoted the diagram to the side. You'll see the devices on the left, and they actually look a little bit like printed circuit board there. The devices are out there. Many of them will be, and increasingly more, will be IP capable and IP connected to the cloud directly. So those will talk to the cloud, and we'll talk about how they get handled in the cloud directly. And there's also going to be a large number of non-IP capable devices, or maybe not willing, devices that sit on the factory floor that need to be protected behind a firewall, et cetera, et cetera. So in this connectivity pattern, you will often see a field gateway, as we call it, that basically talks to those devices either in a custom protocol or by preserving a special DMZ kind of into a networking isolation pattern, and then project those devices into the cloud and act as a proxy basically for those devices. Of course, this is now a little bit outside of my vehicle diagnostic scenario. Think a little bit broader. This may be the parking meters sitting on the street. Maybe those are not directly on the internet. Those connect to some local aggregator, which then connects to the cloud. So the cloud gateway is the first entity in the cloud that really terminates the connections from and to the devices. It'll then typically invoke some custom code that wants to process this data in a little bit more of a real-time fashion. It may be doing actually real-time streaming analysis, alerting, other things like that. And it may generate more data that then needs to be fed back into the same event stream, essentially. Think of it as an enrichment of an event stream. You can think of geotagging being done based on GPS coordinates, things like that. And then data gets pushed into the actual hardcore logic of the application, where you will see applications built using, in the Azure case, Azure platform services like SQL, Compute, Azure websites, et cetera. So let me drill into the Cloud Gateway a little bit now. So as you see, we see two primary patterns here. One is the devices that want to connect to the internet, to the cloud, or the field gateways that want to connect to the cloud can speak service bus native protocols like HTTP, AMQP, or a proprietary protocol field gateway happens to be running on Windows as well. So in this case, we'll have direct device connectivity into the cloud, and in this case, we can maintain these connections very efficiently directly. So the service bus is the one that maintains all these sockets open to your devices. It lets you reach out to devices. Devices get the data in there. We can do things like single connection for both directions of the flow. We'll drill into that a little later. Now, of course, the world is not a single protocol or even three or four or five protocol world, especially when you talk about the Internet of Things. So there will be lots of custom protocols around, and that's why we're actually investing in a framework that allow people to build custom protocol gateways that terminate protocols that, like MQTT, or even complete custom protocols in the cloud, and then still use the service bus as a fabric to fan out all those messages through different backend systems, as a way to target devices, as a programming model for addressing all these devices. So what are some of the challenges that a cloud gateway like service bus needs to deal with? There's, of course, basic connectivity, addressability, devices that are sitting behind firewalls that might be online or offline, that have maybe sporadic connectivity, that are roaming. Another problem is the heterogeneity, different operating systems, different power and network constraints. Network bandwidths can be very expensive in some scenarios. Power for some field devices that are battery-driven can be a very, very, very tight constraints, having to run for 10 years on a single battery. And then, of course, there's a huge variety of protocols that exist. There are going to be hard security challenges around identity, how to identify a device, how does a device authenticate itself to the cloud at scale. Again, when we're talking millions of devices, how do you do all those things? How do you authorize those devices? How do you maintain privacy of the data that flies through? And how do you guarantee that data doesn't get tampered with on the way in or through the system? And of course, all these requirements need to be met at large scale, millions of devices, and at a reasonable cost. On the messaging side, Telemetry is a big challenge here in the sense that there will be a large stream of data coming in from the data that needs to be collected, needs to be filtered, needs to be routed through different backend systems. You have to deal with throughputs, you need to deal with peaks. When networks partition devices come back, there will be potentially a big flood of messages coming in. We see requirements for prioritizing certain messages. If a device sends data about its current fuel level, that's maybe not as important as an engine fault alert that needs to go through faster. On the notification side is when you want to reach out to devices. A big challenge here is to target individual devices and also to be able to target groups of devices in a large population and all that efficiently. And in addition to this one-way pattern of telemetry and notifications, we see a need for, even at scale, ability to send commands with an acknowledge or to have the device come to the cloud and say, give me some data and get the data back and get an acknowledge. So we think a good way to achieve that at scale is, again, through a messaging paradigm where you request response messaging patterns and use features that we'll provide to correlate those messages easily. So how do people tackle this today? We see many customers coming at this from a world where this virtual private networks, devices are really highly protected. People are betting on IPv6 to make that easy because every device can have a unique IP address, right? Devices become the little web server. They can be reached. You can call them. You can query them. They can send up data up into the cloud. Things seem happy. But there are some problems with this, of course. It's expensive to set up. It's complex to set up. Requires network layer intervention, especially in corporate environments. It's hard to do for loosely connected devices. Devices are actually not secured from each other. The network is private, but any device on the network can connect to any other device. So in some scenarios, that is actually a big problem. If you think about connected vehicles, you don't want somebody else to reach into your vehicle just because they happen to be on the same virtual network as you are. And then out of all this comes, of course, scale problems, both in the sense of scaling is out to a large number of devices. It's very expensive to set these things up. But it's also, in terms of device reach, hard. Many devices just are not capable of running a VPN. So you will have to come up with alternate mechanisms. So what's our solution to this problem? We call it service-assisted communication. It's actually nothing really new. If you think about it, it's really just the internet browser model taken to the device world. What do I mean? So devices sit out there. Again, I have my little printed circuit board device out there sitting behind a net, protected network, very likely. In a home environment, there will be a router sitting in front of it. And this device, like any computer with a browser, just reaches out to the internet and connects to a server. But in this case, the device calls out to our cloud gateway. It goes through a firewall because it's an outgoing connection. The cloud gateway then accepts this connection and can basically act as a proxy for the device. So at this point, the gateway can, of course, receive messages from the device, but it can also send messages back to the device using the same connection that has been established by the device, similar to a browser's get notifications when you're running web apps in the browser. You can get data back from the client. So the characteristics of this approach is really that the device doesn't really have any inbound connections going on. It's not listening for any traffic. It's not exposed, really, to the internet. It's just calling out, and it's protected by most of the existing internet infrastructure. The firewall router that it's behind still protects it, so it's a very secure approach. Even on the intermediaries, like the routers, there's no really inbound ports open. So all those investments in internet security that have been done in the industry, they all just pay off as they are today. So this is really the basic paradigm that we think will make the Internet of Things scale. And we think service bus is a great way to implement these cloud gateways and to then have scalable connectivity across all these devices. So let's drill a little bit into the cloud gateway using service bus. Excuse me. So each device conceptually gets essentially an outbox where it can send messages to, and an inbox that it can use to receive messages. How do they do that? As I said, they connect directly to service bus if they want to using AMQP or HTTP. Other protocols can be implemented using a custom protocol head that sits in front of service bus. And then in terms of security, we're currently requiring TLS SSL, which is sort of the baseline on the internet right now. But we do see that as being too heavyweight for many devices, so investigating lighterweight variations on that. We'd be interested in your feedback and requirements in that space, if there are any. So out of this, each device really gets a place in the cloud where it can be reached, either by sending messages to the device or by receiving messages from the device. And these inbox outboxes, think queues and topics, can be used then for telemetry, for alerts, service invocations, for commands and queries, and all the things we talked about. Let's drill a little bit into the outbox when a device sends things to the cloud. What we do in service bus, the message, of course, the data gets into a topic, and then we use filters to do the pub/sub thing and getting different streams of data to different backend systems. So as I said, regular telemetry data goes into one channel, gets received by one set of backend systems, in this case a storage processor that just archives the data. And messages that are more alert messages, like an engine fault from a vehicle, go to a different subscription, go to a different backend system, and can be handled differently. So this gives us splitting the stream, the telemetry stream, into multiple different semantic areas. Parallel processing, we can get different level of quality of services by having different backend system processing different priority messages, essentially, alerts processed by a different backend system than the others. And of course, all this can still be done by, while still leveling and balancing the load across the devices. One system falls behind, the other system doesn't get affected. If there's an outage on either side, systems can catch up without impacting each other. If a receiving system goes down, devices can still send. If devices go down and come back up, backend systems don't get overwhelmed by the load. Standard enterprise messaging benefits that apply in the Internet of Things scenarios just as well. Let's look at the flip side, getting messages from the cloud to the device. We take a similar paradigm here. Each device gets a subscription. And then we set up filters so that we can route messages in an efficient way to the devices, either to a single device. There's a filter when a message is tagged with a device ID, then only that message only makes it to this one device. Or we can put filters on there that are more like tags that let you say, oh, this device is a Model T versus this device is a Model A. Then I can send a message with tag Model T, and it'll be filtered out so it reaches all the devices that have this tag, essentially, conceptually, on it. So a very powerful application here of the pub/sub pattern that lets us really do unicast and groupcast of messages to devices at scale, again, with the benefits of independence between sender and receiver. If one of them goes down, device comes back later in a roaming scenario, it'll still pick up its messages. And if different backend systems goes down, of course, they're independent from each other. Interesting in this case are TTLs. If I send certain commands, I may not be interested for those to be processed forever. If I remotely unlock my car door and that doesn't make it within 30 seconds, I'm probably not interested in having that processed an hour later. Probably not a good idea. So TTLs are come in very handy in these kind of scenarios. So to summarize this a little bit, I hope I've motivated why I speak of Service Bus as the Azure Device Gateway. You're going to see us make lots of investment in this direction. And to give you a little bit of an evidence internal in Microsoft products, Service Bus actually being used essentially as a cloud gateway today. And that is a pattern that we expect to expand. You may have heard about the Azure Intelligent System Service that was announced 2 weeks ago. It actually uses Service Bus internally. ISS is currently in preview, and it's basically a rich software service solution for the Internet of Things. Leveraging Service Bus, it gets all the connectivity benefits, but it adds in certain solutions around the backend data archiving, data analysis, et cetera. A few products in Microsoft use Service Bus today, Visual Studio Profile Sync, which probably many of you are using. Actually uses Service Bus to terminate all the connections in the cloud. So if you make a change to some setting in Visual Studio, it actually shows up in other Visual Studio instances on the same machine or other machines through the cloud. And you may have seen the case study of Halo 4 game statistics are actually getting processed through Service Bus. In that case, it's used as a load leveler in case backend systems slow down. Service Bus still accepts the messages and gamers don't lose their precious game scores. So this is how Service Bus is used inside of Microsoft. With this, I'll turn it over to Sean to show a non-Microsoft application of the Device Cloud Gateway.
Hello. Get my mic on. So I'm the founder of Fielding Systems. Fielding Systems delivers the digital oil field by collecting data from anything, people, devices, sensors. We pull that data in the cloud and then turn it into information that's shared. So my background before Fielding Systems was consulting in various projects, web, BI, and ended with as a BizTalk architect. So if there's anyone that's into BizTalk out there, you'll see where and why I took the approach that I did. So Fielding Systems has two products, two services, 100% on the cloud. The one we're primarily focused on today is SCADAvisor. SCADAvisor is connected to oil and gas devices, flow computers, EFMs, devices that are legacy, most still run on serial networks, 9600 baud. So if you're, it looks like there's kind of a variety of people in here, but most people, I would assume, know what 9600 baud meant. So these devices are slave devices. They only respond when you request information from them. So in building a polling engine, it feeds all the data to SCADAvisor, we needed a way of collecting that data, but managing the connections to those field devices. So we're going out over IP. So at a very high level, this is how it works. So we go out over IP connections and connect to various Ethernet serial servers out to devices. But these devices are very limited. You can't throw a bunch of connections like you can at a web service and it will scale. It's one connection open to that device at a time. And you line up those requests. So if you're talking 400 devices, you better be talking to them all in order. So essentially, it's PubSub. We have polling instances. Those are assigned to various IP port combinations, and they're subscribing, much like the couple diagrams ago that was up. Now, primarily, we're polling on a schedule every 5 minutes, every 15 minutes, and that's all managed by a central service, the master scheduler. And those workloads are distributed out, but we also have other requests coming in which I'll demo here in a minute how we do it today, from a website, from tablets, people out in the field asking, what's going on with this oil well right now? So I'm going to move. I'm going to skip this. You can pick up the presentation. This is a detailed view of how that process works. So now I'm going to switch to the demo. So I'm going to select a device. This device is in Northeast Ohio, and we're going to pull that device. So I'm initiating out a request, sends out through service bus, gets directed to that pulling instance that is responsible for talking to that oil well. So right now it's just going to keep pulling, updating the screen every few seconds. You can see what the current pressure is, data points that are being collected. So that's how we do it today. Works great, but when we scale this in the cloud, there's a better way to do it, and that's using a push model rather than a pool architecture. And that's where we get into more of devices. So I'm going to go ahead and stop this. Yeah. So what are some problems that can be solved by the push approach? The scalability and resiliency of a service. So those pulling instances, right? And we manage this today, but there's a better way to do it. So if a pulling instance is sticky to this range of IP ports, if that goes down, that has to be transferred. But if it was in the middle of queued up, 500 requests, now we got to offload those. But more importantly, the devices that, and I'll show you this one in a minute. Has a lot of capability that the legacy devices out in the field don't do. They don't talk to the web. We could sample a lot more data, compress it, encrypt it, operate on standard web protocols. And as Marcus demonstrated earlier, use what's already available, but use it in a smarter way. So it can push data on a set interval, but also ask for commands. And if in the example I just had, if I wanted to ask for information from a device or six devices at once and wanted to stream that data back to a phone, a tablet, or a web page, very easy to do because I'm just sending a command to that device. It also eliminates any type of latency on sending notifications. So currently, that information has to come back, it's analyzed, alarm is created, sending out text messages and voice call outs through Twilio. But there's no reason why that device can't do it directly. And since we already have the pulling engine and we talk natively to these devices in their various protocols, we're just transferring that to the smaller device. So I'm not going to demonstrate talking into one of the legacy protocols. What I have in the demonstration is, so I guess I'll go through this real quick before I hop over there. Push architecture, very similar to the pool, except the orange boxes are the smart devices that are sticking out on the legacy device. So we're just going to replace the communication device that may be a serial radio device. If you put a smarter device, it can still talk in that native protocol, it can access all that information, it pulls it in, and then ultimately pushes it out to the cloud. But some of the things that we're seeing more and more today that aren't possible under the current design of networks that are on oil well pads are they want to put more stuff on that pad. We got multiple wells on the pad, and data's there. So we still have that throughput issue of going out and collecting data, and a lot of it's point to point. But if you blanket the whole thing with mesh, and you put smart devices. Not only can you pull all of that information, you provide a proxy to that pad, but now you can have the devices talk to each other or talk to each other where it makes sense, 5 miles down the road or 10 miles down the road. If there's a problem at a pad, it can notify somebody, a device, and actually make changes all behind a firewall, all secure. So if three wells went down and that forces an adjustment that needs to be made downstream at a processing facility, all of that can be done device to device using service bus. So you can see the topic subscriptions, much like Marcus went over, and then the various subscriptions and what we're going to do with the data. This also allows us to scale out across any Azure data center. So now the demo. So what I got here is a BeagleBone Black device. It's $45. The case, which is made by Logic Supply. You can tack on other boards on here. So it's this device is more than capable of doing a lot of stuff. So what I'm going to do is kick off the demo right now, and then you can see the light blinking. That's transmitting and receiving messages. So everyone sees that. You want to switch to this screen. Which one was this? So we can kind of see the code. So running Python, and it's reading a temperature sensor. That little red board on top of the breakout board is a temperature sensor. So I'm sending and receiving messages to the bus, and I have a web app that is running that I'll start up. So remember that interface that I showed before. This is really the next generation. So we're going to be pushing data from service bus incrementally, to the graph. So I fired up. I'll show you the code in a second. So we're going to. I let this run a little bit before it started, so we could see a variation. So that's the jump when the device was off. But I can also send commands. So the device has been programmed to send new data through service bus. Every few seconds, but if I want to send a command to that device, let me keep PuTTY up so we can see that run. And I want to tell it to go into hyperdrive, which just means send a bunch more data, send it faster. So I kicked it off, and now we should see this graph updating a little more frequently. Let's put my finger on it. That data is coming in. I guess it's a little cooler in here right now. My finger's cold. So that's it. That's it actually running. So let me just show you how easy it is to send and receive messages to the bus. So this is the demo code for Python sending messages. You can see there's really not too much to it. We have once we establish the client, which it's service bus, you just have the connection string. We're put together a message. We start up a transmission, subscribing to the endpoint, and putting a message, and then we hit send. So that's all there is to it. That's what's taking the temperature sensor reading off, pushing it out, which then it can be picked up by the web app. For what we're going to do, what we're doing in the future for the next generation in the smart device, obviously it's going to be a lot more complex. There's various, many types of messages. It's not just one temperature sensor, but that's really it. In terms of reading from the bus, again, we're just looking for a message, establish a client, pull the message out, and I'm just concatenating all the data together. We can support multiple messages and then completing. And then from there, it's JSON return back to the web page. And that's all there is to it. Good. So the big picture, this is the big picture of the IoT, of devices connecting wells, video cameras, people. If you're wearing H2S sensors and safety equipment, all of that is visible in relation to the well site and things that are in the environment, along with connecting the tablets and other devices that are used to consume that data.
Okay. Thank you, Sean. So to recap, this was a real-world scenario where the service-assisted connectivity pattern that I talked about earlier can make systems more efficient, more scalable, allows fielding systems to put smart devices on legacy oil wells and take advantage of all the advantages of the connectivity pattern that I was talking about. Now, let me show you my synthetic scenario. Again, I'm going to have some code for you as well in a minute. Let me motivate the scenario that I've set up for you a little bit more. On the left, I have illustrated the vehicles. For the vehicle, I built a sort of a simulator, but it has a real onboard diagnostics module plug in it, which I can plug into my, which I actually did plug into my car. And it'll then gather data from the vehicle, like speed, RPM, engine temperature, and things like that. And it'll be able to send that up into the cloud using Service Bus, using AMQP. In the middle, I'm showing Service Bus here. We saw the inbox-outbox pattern with topics for commands and control and topics for telemetry. The telemetry streams are routed in my demo into three different backend systems. The first at the top is a blob storage adapter. It essentially pushes the telemetry data into a storage format that can then be consumed directly by HD Insight. So now I can do large-scale data analysis over my data. I can do machine learning over this. And I can visualize data then using Office 365 BI, things like that. I'm not going to demo that a lot, but I'm going to show you how the data actually gets into blob storage and what the code is that I've written for that. The next level down is a custom real-time processing engine. In this scenario, it'll basically look for certain patterns in the event stream and then do some alerting. In my case, I have a little panic button on the device. If that gets pressed twice in 5 seconds, then I raise an alert in the backend system. Very synthetic, apologize. But it illustrates the challenge of doing time-based alerting over a large number of devices at scale. The next backend system is, I call it the table storage adapter. It basically writes the telemetry stream into table storage for consumption by backend applications. And I've actually set it up to write it in two different ways. One is just the last value. Whatever the last diagnostics data from the vehicle was gets written as a row in table storage and gets updated there. Makes it very efficient to build a web portal that shows the current status of a device. And then I have a history table set up that, again, accumulates data for some time. And again, that can let applications build views on, okay, so what was the speed history of this car and things like that. Build visualization of that for applications. So with this, let me introduce you to the .NET Gadgeteer device that I've set up. This is the actual main board. It's a Fast Spider. It runs, I keep forgetting exactly, 12 megabytes of RAM. So it's small, but not super small. I would call it a medium-sized device, as opposed to the BeagleBoard that one's running full-blown Linux, probably with 256 meg of RAM, something like that. This one's a microcontroller. It's not running a full operating system. It runs the .NET micro framework. I have connected to it a button, which will be my panic button if I press this twice. It's going to be considered an alert. I've got a temperature sensor on it, which I'm actually not using in this demo, but it's nice to have. And this is the onboard diagnostics module that plugs using this connector into any car built since 1997 per some kind of official government regulation. This device is currently hooked up to the internet using Ethernet. There's an Ethernet model that's plugged into the microcontroller. In my car, I tether that to a phone. In a real-world device, of course, that would be a GSM module incorporated into this, doing remote connectivity. And for demo purposes, I attached a display to this device. Again, in a real-world scenario, the form factor would probably be more a dongle like this that you plug into a diagnostics port, and it just connects up to the internet, and off you go. There's actually aftermarket solutions available that do that today. So let's turn on this device. Let me first show you what it does and then how it does it. Power it up. It's booting up. And the first thing it'll do is it'll, of course, connect to the internet. It'll obtain time. It doesn't actually have a battery-backed clock, so that was the first challenge I had to work around. get the time, because you need time for any kind of interest in telemetry, but you also need it for SSL without certificate validation, et cetera. Without time, you cannot do any of this kind of stuff. So the device has now connected, got an IP address, and it got its first reading now from the sensor. In this case, it's not connected, so I took the liberty to have a simulator in there. So you'll see some weird speed and temperature things in there, essentially random numbers. But if I plug this in, it'll actually record real data. So every 10 seconds, it takes a sample, shows on the display in this case, and it started sending it to Service Bus right now. It sends the OBD data, the onboard diagnostics data, and it also sends a separate temperature record. I'm going to focus more on the OBD data record for the rest of my demos. So it's sending things up. Everything is happy. I also have a companion app. Think of that as a mobile phone app. Just it's easier to project from here. Let me put these up side by side. All right, so this is now a companion app that has been paired with my vehicle. So somewhere in the backend, somebody knows that these things belong together. And what my backend does, it actually routes the OBD data that comes from the device out to this other device using a command channel. It essentially sends a notification to the device, and it shows them here. Let's see. It's actually working. Yes. So let's look at the device. Every 10 seconds, it sends a message, goes out, and then the companion app just updated every 10 seconds. Now, if I had a smart machine learning algorithm behind that, I could see that maybe there's something that detects potential engine problems or engine overheating kind of patterns. In this case, the backend system would send a message potentially to the device to alert the driver. I apologize, I put this just in the UI here, but I'll just send this message out to the device. What you'll see, it'll go out into the cloud. The cloud will know, oh, this companion app, in this case, is actually associated with my mobile device, and it'll route a notification to the device, which will then show up on the screen, hopefully. There it is. So on my fancy UI, where I got this alert now. So again, what happened here? Device sends telemetry to the cloud, gets sent to a companion device to see current status, and then I can send a command message back to the device. I can, of course, also change sampling rates, things like that. I won't go into that here right now. Same pattern, a command goes to the device then changes some behavior based on that. So I've shown you bidirectional connectivity, device to cloud, cloud to device. Now let's see the code on how it's done. So this is the device code now. It's in Visual Studio. This device gets programmed in C# very conveniently. It uses our AMQP Lite library that I just published a few minutes ago. It sets up some display-related things here, and then it gathers the connectivity information for the device. So this is really what's talking about the inbox and outbox that I mentioned earlier. So the device knows the Service Bus URI it needs to talk to, and then within that Service Bus namespace, where it's supposed to get its commands from. In this case, it's a subscription called something something S000, highly scalable system, so we have many subscriptions in there with a weird naming convention, but it's really just a Service Bus subscription that the device receives messages from. And the outbox is similarly a topic in Service Bus where the device will just send messages to. And then, of course, it needs a key that it's burned into its firmware, essentially. And then it gets an identifier that uniquely identifies this device in the Service Bus messaging routing world. I can do the pairing of devices, and I can do filtering, multicast of target group, multicast of messages, et cetera. Okay. Let's go through. Here's where the program sets itself up. This is standard .NET Gadget tier things. Initializes the display with some text. And there's a helper library that actually gets the time. And once the time is obtained, now we can start talking about sending things to Service Bus. I will skip the details of the time logic here. It's a little bit tricky, but it's built into .NET Gadget here. Can be made to work. OK, so now it's time to send a message. So basically, this is in the timer loop. Every 10 seconds, this gets called. If I have an accurate time, I will actually get my credentials and URLs for my Service Bus entities. I will create a AMQP sender using this information. And then I will start the sender, which essentially creates the connections. So in this case, it creates a sender link. For those of you familiar with AMQP, it's a three-layered system: connection, session, and then a link within that session. There's a helper library in here that abstracts most of this from you. But if you want, you can drill into the AMQP Lite library that I'm using. Exposes all the AMQP features to you, so you have maximum flexibility in integrating with systems. Similarly, it creates a receiver. And then it actually starts sending the data, which looks pretty much standard messaging. So I create a message. In this case, it's not a brokered message. It's our AMQP library, which has a different class structure. It sets up the AMQP system headers with a subject, which is basically what we're using to determine message types. It maps in the service bus world to the label construct in the brokered message when we receive it. You'll see that later. And then I set a bunch of properties here, the time that I sent it, and then the data that was sampled. You see the speed, RPM, all those things. And then I send the message up to service bus. It goes through a local queue, in memory queue, and then the actual send looks like this, which basically calls the send message on the AMQP library link. Error handling is done here through a callback in this library. So when the message has been sent, it basically tells you usually success, in which case I'm logging that on the display as you saw earlier. And then there's notifications on when links get torn down, connections get closed, and I'm handling those for retries, et cetera. Let me just quickly show you the receive side here. Oops, sorry, I skipped by it. Let me relocate myself. OK, so the reader gives us a callback whenever a message arrives. This method gets called. We get the message in here, and then we can now process this message based on the type of the command. We can say this was a DOSIC control command, or here's my alert command that I sent earlier, and it basically puts it on the display, locks the display for 10 seconds, et cetera, et cetera. So this is in a nutshell the device code, very straightforward, just talk service bus, send, receive, queues. That's all there is. The beauty is in the AMQP protocol that's being used here. It lets us actually share the single connection that's established to Service Bus for both sending and receiving from different from different Service Bus topics. So if you think about it, we are sending to one Service Bus entity, receiving from the other entity. With AMQP, we can actually do that over a single connection using the AMQP link mechanisms. Okay. So back to our big picture. We drilled into the device, how the device sends and receives messages from and to the cloud. Now let's look at the, actually, no, before we drill into demos, I'm sorry, I'll set a little more context on the backend system. All right, so behind this demo sits a backend system that we'll drill into a little bit. Before we go there, I want to position Service Bus a little bit. I don't know how many of you are actually familiar with the Intelligent System Service? Show of hands. Maybe I'll skip the slide. It's basically we'll have a turnkey offering for IoT scenarios that people can use. It offers a lot of the functionality that I'm demoing out of the box with a device repository. It has all the advantages because it uses Cerebrus under the covers. But we do see that there are scenarios where you want to use Cerebrus either in conjunction with ISS, for example, if you need a custom protocol gateway, or if you want to completely build your own solution because maybe you're a competitor to ISS, which is perfectly fine with us. And again, I said Cerebrus is the gateway inside ISS, so if you start with Cerebrus, you're covered in moving towards ISS, and vice versa, there's great synergy between the two offerings. Okay, now let's drill into the backend that I've set up behind the system. So the IoT poses challenges around scale, millions of devices, as I said before, there's no messaging system in the world that can scale to handle all of the stuff with a single queue or with a single entity. So what you'll need to do in this world is to really partition your systems and then have a management framework around systems so that you can build scalable backend systems that can also be equally partitioned along your connectivity partition boundaries. So to enable this, we really see four building blocks for this backend system. So we talked about the custom protocol gateway. That's the layer that enables us to talk any protocol, legacy protocols, new protocols that are not yet natively supported. The framework has a telemetry pump that has pluggable adapters where you can actually write data into different backend systems using relatively little effort and leveraging all the partitioning and sharding and scaling logic that's built into the device gateway itself. And we provide a provisioning and metadata store, basically a device registry, so you can keep track of which devices are where, attach metadata to those devices, and a service that helps you create all the underlying artifacts that are needed to implement the device gateway functionality. For example, creating all the topics and queues and subscriptions and the filters, all that is managed for you by this provisioning service. And there's a bunch of storage accounts that are needed to operate the service. All this is actually automatically provisioned for you in this reference architecture. So I alluded to that in the beginning. This is available. We implemented this as a set of samples that we're actually starting to share with customers today to give people a jump start, to give people an idea on how to use Cerebrus today, and also to give people a way forward as we add more IoT-related features to Cerebrus to make transitions more smoothly by updating the sample and the reference architecture. So let's drill in a little bit. What does it really take to use to build a device gateway at scale? So if we look at ingestion here a little bit, this is drilling into one of the partitions of the cloud gateway. If you think about it, you'll probably want to have this cloud gateway in multiple data centers if you're really talking about millions of devices. So think of this as one of the data center installations. And in this data center installation, you will have the protocol gateway, you'll have the command topics, and you're going to have the ingestion topics for telemetry. So I drew this as a single box right now because conceptually that's what it is. Basically, devices send things to the cloud. But in reality, it needs to be partitioned. It needs to be sharded. So what we do under the covers, we basically create multiple ingress topics up to 65,000 in this case, and each of these topics has a subscription for each of the different backend systems that we talked about earlier. There's one for the analytics adapter, one for the last value adapter, and one for the real-time processing engine adapter, et cetera. So devices now get bound to one of these ingestion topics. If you remember the URL that you saw on the device, it was really just the name of the topic. All this binding is really handled by the provisioning system. It keeps track how many devices are allocated to which topic, so when another device registered, it knows where to place that device and returns the inbox, outbox URL, and the key sets up security for all this, for these. Similar things happen on the egress side, on the command side. It's a little bit more complicated here. Each device gets a subscription. That's the easy part for the device, if you remember the subscription name. But to make the scale, we add another set of topics on top that really do auto-forwarding and do the fan-out of the messages within the system. So applications really pick one of these egress topics, send a message to it, and the router will really make sure it goes to the right subscription, only the right subscription. That's a little more complicated. I'll show you the artifacts in a bit if we have time. Okay, we talked about partitioning already. So let's drill in and look at the artifacts. Okay, what I'm showing you here is the storage accounts. Let's start with storage, because we're managing so many artifacts in this case that we actually track each and every one of them in table storage. So you see two accounts really here, one for the master system that manages all the partitions, and then one for each partition that manages all the devices. So if you look at the tables that are in here, there's really a partition table. Right now I have only one data center. If we have 10 data centers, there would be 10 rows in there. And each of these tables basically keeps track of what the name of the scale unit is, the hosted service, or this partition is, how many ingress shards are on there, and what the endpoint URLs are, as well as what the settings are for the telemetry adapters in that partition. And then the system keeps track of the shards. So in each partition, we primarily keep track of devices. So right now I have 10 devices registered in here. Each device has its device ID in here. It has the key, and it has the URLs of the inbox and outbox that it's supposed to be talking to. So this is really the data that you saw in my client code. Okay. So devices tables are partitioned. Basically, each data center has its own table. That's how we achieve global scale. We also achieve scale within the data center. If you have really high throughput devices, you may have multiple partitions within a data center. And we just need to test this partition to a certain load capacity. And then if you need more, you just stand up another one of those, and you don't have to worry about scaling up any further. You're really ending up with this pure scale-out model, which is very critical in this world. So let me show you now a little bit the service bus artifacts behind this. As to be expected, here are the topics, the ingress topics for the device, and they have subscription for each of the backend systems on there. There's one interesting thing here for the commands. The replies that are coming from the commands, those are being treated specially. They go currently through the same channel, but they get filtered out for the telemetry consumers, and all the telemetry gets filtered out for the command reply consumer. So if you think about sending a command to a device, it's a message out and a message back. This message back needs to be correlated back processed by the command engine. So let me just show you the rules that we use for doing that. And we're basically using a property in the message. We call it relates to. If that's specified, then we know, oh, that's a response to a command, and be routed to a different place in the backend system. The other subscription basically all gets all the data. I won't show you that. Now the egress is where it gets a little more interesting. We have the out topics, each of them with 100, up to 100 subscriptions. Right now I don't have as many provisions. There's only one per egress topic. And these topics, these egress subscriptions are fed by routers that have auto-forward rules for each of the devices, basically. The rule sits here and says, it's actually, if this device ID is specified, message goes through. Otherwise, it doesn't. And it gets routed, it gets auto-forwarded to the right output topic. Let me show you one more thing here, and that is the way all these artifacts get created is through a tool. It's a command line tool, but of course there's API sitting behind this, and it can be used to create a new partition. I won't do that here right now, so it'll take 10, 15 minutes. But I'll show you how I would do it. So I basically say, what are my Azure credentials? So I have access to create service bus entities and search accounts. And then I will specify a load model. That is sort of a key thing here. And we see that with customers as a common pattern and concern. You really want to nail down what your load pattern is for your devices. How many devices are you going to have? What's the RAM for the devices? How many messages per hour are you going to send from each device? How many messages do you send to the devices? That's going to drive a lot of your costs if you don't think about that upfront. You either end up with a hopelessly over-dimensioned system that you're never going to use, or you end up worse with an under-dimensioned system where you don't have enough headroom to grow that. So we embody this basically in this tool to say, okay, you tell us how many devices you have, you tell us how many messages you're going to send, and based on that, we calculate the right number of topic and subscriptions you need so we won't overload a single topic. We have the right number of devices consuming from each topic, et cetera, et cetera. So all the details of the topics that you saw and the filters and all that, it's all handled by this framework, so you don't really need to worry about that. Now, let me show you some of the backend code, actually. I will start with the table storage adapter code. So this is now an adapter that plugs into the telemetry router. And it basically sits on a set of worker roles that are managed by us. The telemetry router keeps track of which adapter instance should receive data from which ingress shard, which ingress topic, et cetera. All this is handled for you. So all the adapter needs to worry about is essentially processing messages. And here's the core message for that. Actually we're using a batching paradigm because that turns out to be way more efficient for most backend systems, including table storage. So the adapter gets notified, hey, start a new batch for me, and it gets to put aside some look-aside data that it may need to identify that batch later. Then it gets asked to process that batch, getting its look-aside data and the message to process. In this case, it's a table storage adapter, so it'll create actually a table in Azure Table Storage. It'll convert this message essentially first. It needs to establish a partition key. If you're familiar with Azure Table Storage, it requires a row key and a partition key. This is configurable in this adapter. And it constructs essentially the partition key value out of a set of message properties. You can say, I want to partition this thing based on time and device ID, and those will then be lumped into the partition key. Same thing for the row key. And then the data is basically parsed out of the messages into a dynamic table entity for table storage. And then the adapter just batches it up and writes it to table storage. Let me show you the end result of that. So let me show you the table storage that comes out of that. So this adapter is configured to go to my own account. It's not a device gateway or whatever owned device. It's a configuration setting. I told it to use the DH demo account. And in there, it'll create a different table for each message type that comes in. So as you can see, I've played around with this a little bit. Here's our OBD data. And this is the full history of all the messages I've sent so far. Going back to November last year, there's a lot of rows in this table. But as you can see, the partition key was specified here is time-based. The row key is based on my VIN, vehicle identification number, and a timestamp in there. and then you just see all the message properties just logged into this table. Now applications can go in and show visualizations of this data. There's a second instance of this adapter configured, and that's the last value data table. And that one just keeps, basically, for each device, the last message it has received of this message type. And again, you can see this. There's only 70 unique devices in here right now. Similar structure. It's just a different partition key. In this case, I used the device ID as the partition key, and that automatically gives me the last value semantics I wanted. How are we doing on time? Got to move a little faster. So let me just show you quickly the blob storage adapter. So I mentioned there's an HD Insight adapter available that writes data into blob storage that can then be consumed for analytics queries by HD Insight. So I'm showing you here a blob storage browser. It looks like a file system browser, but it's actually Azure Blob Storage. And you can see there's data still coming into this. The adapter writes things currently as CSV files. I will download that here just to show you the data format. Very simple. You can see my simulated VIN, all the data that's being sent, again, going into this file. There will be multiple files here, multiple blobs, as the volume goes up. If I have 100,000 devices and a lot of data, we're going to the adapter automatically creates multiple blobs. And then at the HD Insight side, the data then gets converged. So I previously ran a query here. Let me kick off the next one. These things take a minute. So the query I ran previously is basically a Hive query. Hive is a SQL-like language to work over large amounts of data in HD Insight. And I just did a simple select of the number of rows and the maximum average of certain data points for a certain beta. Think of that as I'm now running a Hadoop job that really fans out to all the partitions I have over time and brings back this data. And in this case, gives me a simple number. I have 7,000 rows with a maximum speed, et cetera, et cetera. So we let this reduced job run. So when I ran this last, we had 7,500. Now it's 7,900 messages. My device has been pretty busy. This was the Device Gateway backend demo. There's a lot more to it. We have not enough time to go through all of it. If you're interested in exploring this more, really using service bus at large scale with large number of devices in a real world product, we would very, very much like to hear from you and explore if we can make some of the sample code available and help you get going with these projects. All right, briefly, what's new in Service Bus itself. We just enabled, I think last week, a new feature on all existing queues and topics where you can basically set the express flag, and that lets you trade off lower latency and higher throughput against a possibility of message loss in case one of our VMs crashes or whatever may happen. A message may have been acknowledged to the sender but may not have been persisted durably yet. But as a result, you get substantially lower latency, which may be interesting in some scenarios. We provide per message flexibility, so you can actually get your persistence back for higher priority messages, maybe some in IoT scenarios again. Telemetry data may be okay if you lose a few, but an alert you definitely never want to lose, so you send the persistence flag on there. Key scenarios this enables beyond the IoT is a second screen experience for gaming. Again, you're probably not very interested in guaranteed delivery of the current position of your opposing player or something like that. If it's lost, it's lost, right? The next message is going to establish the right stats in the game. And it can also be used very well in interactive user experience, signal R, backplane, if you have multiple browser instances communicating with each other through a backplane. Again, you're usually not interested in delivering something that happened 30 minutes ago. Okay, the other thing we talked about already that's new in Service Bus, it's the ASP.NET Lite library. again, this is a lightweight AMQP client library that works on pretty much any .NET platform, including .NET Micro Framework, .NET Compact. We think it should also work very well in on Mono and Xamarin and other cross-platform .NET environments. We have demoed it as the vehicle diagnostic demo, and I will make that source code available very soon as well. Next steps, where do we go from here? So to recap, Service Bus, for us, the big deal going forward is really the device gateway, cloud device gateway. We will be the Azure we are, and we will even more so be the Azure cloud device gateway, making lots of investments there. Lots of service being built today inside Microsoft, outside Microsoft. We're enhancing Service Bus with features to make that even simpler, even more rich, and we're looking for your feedback. If you're interested in exploring this with us, we can make the sample and guidance available to you, and we can talk about that. And I would really like to understand your requirements and your thinking. If you want to learn more about all this IoT stuff, I highly recommend Clemens Wuster's video blog, if you haven't seen it already. He has a great set of videos on IoT, the whys and hows, and trade-offs, service-assisted connectivity, et cetera, et cetera. I encourage you to explore our new features, express cues and topics, let us know what you think, if it works for your scenarios or not. Play around with mqp.net Lite, let us know if that works for you. And that's it. Thank you very much. We'll be around for any questions.